now tuned in to the Commissioner's Conversation.
Allow me to reintroduce myself. My name is
Commissioner Gordon.
Yes, sir. Welcome back. You are tuned in to the Commissioner's Conversation. I am your host, Commissioner Gordon. This week on the line, we have a guy who's like myself on the up and coming. You know, I like to get the guy, you know, get everybody. We're on the ground floor and we're going to raise the floor up. You can hear him on BryceY2KSports.com. You can check out everything he's doing there. He's also a part of Sideline Sports. Bryce Lewis, how are you, sir?
I'm good, man. I'm good, Commish. How you doing?
Man, everything is good. I mean, we can't ask for anything better in Atlanta. I mean, the Braves are World Series champs. Mm-hmm. We beat the Saints, although it gave everybody a damn heart attack in the city.
That's just part of it. That's just part of it.
And I mean, the Hawks are figuring it out, it seems. I can't say that they're in playoff form just yet, but the Hawks are figuring it out. And I kind of want to start there with the Hawks. Like, they had the city in their hands, much like the Braves have it now. And we expected Trey to come out and play a certain type of way. We expected the playoff Hawks that we saw last season come out this season, and then we didn't get it. Like, what are you seeing on the floor that's missing from last year?
Well, to me, I think right now, and this is something I kind of started touching on today a little bit on some social media and Twitter. I think what we're seeing right now with the Hawks is this. One thing we have to remember with this team is that we're doing something that in today's NBA doesn't really get done. You don't win with your core players being below 25. They're usually in their prime, battle tested, went through some playoffs, they've gone years, you know, Giannis went through right. it, you know, Kawhi, you know, with Kyle Lowry, he went through it, and, you know, all that. And we haven't. We've only had 1 year of success with this squad. And I think also with younger players, it's always a big issue with young players is that consistency. It's hard to get a young player to be consistent day in and day out, like it is a guy who has been in that spot and knows what it takes. And I think you're seeing that as well in the play. I think we're kind of figuring out pieces to the puzzle because this is the first time everybody's been healthy for a stretch. And now we're having to figure out, okay, so who is it going to be Trey every night? You know, because we got other guys. But then, you know, if it's not Trey, then is it John? Is it DeAndre? Is it Cam? You know, Trey came out, press conference, said, I've been focusing on getting everybody involved, and that's been messing up my shot. But then you hear people complaining all the time, Trey take too many shots, and need to start passing. So it's one of those things where you got to figure all this stuff out. Then you got Nate. People kind of souring on Nate. They don't like some of the lineups. They don't like some of the things he's been doing, or, you know, with players that he's been playing. And there's just been a lot going on. But I think it's still a figuring out process. It's only 11 games into the season. It's an 82 game season. You know, you're going to have ups and downs. That's why I didn't get up in arms when we lost to guys like Cleveland. Like, listen, Cleveland technically is winning. They blew out Denver. They beat a lot of good teams so far. They may be a playoff team. So that's not going to look as bad at the end of the day. Plus, I think we play them 4 times. You get 3 other chances. So it's one of those things right now where I feel like personally, it's a wait and see approach. Obviously we want to play better, but there's no reason to overreact to what's going on right now.
Yeah, I think you're in the same place where I am in terms of, like you said, it's 82 games. You have a full slate. I think we're one of the deeper teams in the league. Like, you go and you look at the roster and you can pull a guy off like Cam Reddish, you can pull a Bogdanovich, and it just keep going deeper and deeper into the bench where you look around at some of these star-studded teams that are predicted to win the East, whether it's Miami, whether it's Brooklyn or Milwaukee, they can't go as deep. And I think that's part of the thing that Nate has to figure out, like when to play who, how many minutes do you get played? How do I play you? Do I play this guy primarily for defensive purposes? And then you had, like you touched on, you had the emergence of a Cam Reddish. Cam Reddish came on the scene and wowed everyone after a couple lackluster seasons prior to that. Also, You have a healthy DeAndre Hunter who everyone has these great expectations for. And it's almost like I was listening to Monday Night Countdown yesterday, and they were talking about the Patriots. Now, and they were basically referencing the early first four, five, six games for Bill Belichick. It's almost like an extension of preseason. And it's the whole figuring out process, and what he wants to do is hit stride come now, come November, as you roll into the playoffs. And it's similar to what I think the Hawks are trying to do in terms of Nate McMillan putting everything together. You're rolling it out. You didn't really get to see all that you wanted to see, the different combinations that you wanted to see in preseason. Mm-hmm. But now you get live bullets and everyone's going out full speed. And so now you try to put everything together to where once you get around closer to All-Star break, you kind of know what you have. And then after All-Star break, you start to put everything together and put it in effect, and that's when you start jockeying for a position as you go into the playoffs.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you're hitting right on it right there, because I think that's the thing about the 82 game season. Even for teams, like when Trey came out and said that the regular season is boring, I mean, what he said isn't necessarily false. A lot of the top teams feel that way. But the biggest thing for us, it's the same thing for any team in that situation, is you just need to develop habits. You need to develop chemistry, rotations, like you said. And that's what we're trying to do right now. I also think sometimes, Nate, you know, with the second unit, because I know that's been a big thing. He'll play the whole second unit. And I know some people don't like that. Like, why are you not, you know, balancing starters and stuff like that? But you have to understand it's the regular season. Coaches do that all the time.
Right.
Because you're not trying to extend your starters' minutes 40 minutes a night. We're not trying to be Tom Thibodeau, who plays the starters 40-plus minutes a night, like in the preseason and in the regular season, and then playoffs come and they don't have legs. Like, Nate's trying to make sure, like, hey, you know, if we're deep, then I need to use my depth. You know, I don't want to just shorten the lineup. Because in the postseason, we know the starters are going to play a lot of minutes, and we know which guys he's going to trust more than others. Right now, it's an opportunity for the other guys to prove that they deserve minutes when that time comes.
Well, and you can look around the league with that, too. It's not just Atlanta doing that. Like, if you look at, not to say that he's not really injured, but you can say the same thing with, like, LeBron. LeBron is hedging, you know, his minutes in terms of how he wants to play. Like, he's there. You can see him jumping up and down on the sideline as Melo makes a three last, you know, a couple threes last night. And it's a long season. Mm-hmm. I've always thought to myself personally that I've always liked the shortened seasons when they started around Christmas, but I know that's no good for the money in terms of the TV contracts that they get. So starting it in October is usually what, you know, to get that 82 is usually what they're going to do, and they're going to keep it that way. But just looking around the East, or, you know, you gotta keep it around the East, just looking around the East, where do you think the Atlanta Hawks fit? Like, do you think they're a top team? Do you think they're a middle of the pack playoff team? Where do you think they fit?
I mean, from a talent perspective, I think they're a top team. It's just getting the consistency and the chemistry and everything down to reach that potential. It's all about the potential that they have and reaching it. And that's going to be big for them right now. I mean, the East is tough this year. You know, it's not like they're walking into the East where last year you pretty much knew outside of, you know, Brooklyn, Philadelphia, Milwaukee, everybody else was kind of in. So you knew who you had to get through. Right. You know, you're in a conference where the Bulls are playing really well. You know, Charlotte's playing well. Miami looks like some people think the best team in basketball right now. You know, and the Knicks even look better than they did last year. I mean, and so, you know, it's going to be tough. And so for them right now, I think right at this very second in time, I've said it. I know people don't like hearing it, but right now, the way we're playing, the Knicks would beat us in 5-6 games right now because of the way we're playing. Right. But we know our potential is higher than the Knicks. And so we have to get to that level. And I think that's what we're just trying to work towards, trying to get right now. And I think with the growing pains and the, you know, the youth and trying to figure out and find motivation, everything like that, it's gonna be a bit of a grind, a bit of a process for us to get there. But we did it last year after the All-Star break. Why can't we do it again?
Well, you said a mouthful when you said the motivation factor. As of right now, the Knicks have that motivation factor. Like, they ended their season with a terrible taste in their mouth. And it was evident even after their first game of the season, they're still, they win, they hollering out F. Trae Young. and they didn't damn play the Hawks. So they've shown the motivation, and you see it clearly every night with RJ, and they're flexing out there, and they're doing all everything that they can to prove to everyone that they're a top tier team. And like you said, their talent limits them. Like, I always respected their talent. I respect their coach, but like you said, they will hit a ceiling at some point. I think also the Hawks, as we're putting it together, we're going to benefit from the chaos that is the East. Like, Miami is probably the more stable team. Mm-hmm. They seem to have it all put together right now. I don't know what that's worth in November, but they seem to be the more stable team. I mean, we're hearing rumors about Jaylen Brown for Ben Simmons. I don't know how, you know what I'm saying? And then you also have the Kyrie Irving situation that's going on up in Brooklyn, whether he'll join the team, whether he'll cave and get vaccinated, or whether he'll just sit out, we don't know. So there's a lot going on around everybody else. And I think that we're in the fortunate situation of having all this chaos going around us as we ride through it and figure out everything out.
Yeah, definitely. I definitely think we can figure it out. I just think it is kind of funny because we're also in a stretch right now where we've basically played championship contender type teams. It's not like we've had a mixture. From the Nets game, we've played pretty legitimate teams.
I think I saw a stat last night during the game where they had us. It may have been, to this point, the second or third hardest schedule coming up.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we still got Utah tonight. Right. We got Milwaukee coming up. You know, it's not like, you know, and then we have a stretch, I believe, I forgot after which game, where we'll have some, you know, middle of the road teams where people are like, okay, that's where we have to bounce back. Because it's just right now, I think with everything going on and the way we've lost games has also been frustrating. You know, we just gotta figure it out. You know, we gotta really put it together. You know, people, like I said, are already overreacting, calling for Nate's head, saying, oh, why we trade Bogey, trade somebody out of here. Like, it's one of those things where it's just like, we should calm down.
Right.
Let's wait. I say give it till January before we need to make any decisions or anything. Because the trade deadline probably until late February. So January, you can kind of get an idea, okay, is this really just not coming together, or do we need to start looking at maybe making some adjustments? Right now, just let it play out. We've seen teams like the Bucks right now are like 2-3 games under 500, but we expect the Bucks to be there in the end. Exactly. So why can't it be us?
And speaking of figuring it out, man, we recently just celebrated a parade here in the city. Mm-hmm. The Braves seem to figure it out. They put it together. Like, you had the Ozuna situation with him and the domestic violence situation. You had Acuna go down. You had injuries. You had everything take place. And it looked like the Braves it wasn't going to be their year. And somehow, some way, a couple moves here and there, you add some pieces, and they figure it out. Like, I, for one, I'll go on record saying I didn't think that we would get past the Dodgers. I think I may have said that on my podcast earlier. But we figured it out, and they kept going, and eventually it was like, shoot, well, why not us?
Yeah, I mean, it's really something that was a beautiful sight, you know, all the injuries and everything, and, you know, the fact that, you know, the GM still went out, got guys, said, listen, we're still going to try to compete. And I'm sure, I don't know if he said compete for championship, but he just wanted to maybe be competitive.
Right.
And then next thing you know, he's like, wait a minute. We beat the Dodgers. Oh, snap. We're going to the World Series. Like, we can win it. You know, and I think that it was so great for the city to see that. You know, we haven't had a championship. I know some people, depending on how you feel about Atlanta United, might say that, but it's not considered one of the major sports. So, you know, just getting that championship was big for us, man. And it makes people feel like, okay, Nabby, this is the turning point for Georgia sports. The Braves won it. Looks like UGA might, you know, way they're looking, they could potentially bring home a national championship. Like I said, we came into the season for the Hawks. They could potentially go for an NBA championship. Listen, the Falcons, we don't expect Super Bowl, but dang it, if they make the playoffs, that's more better than what a lot of people expected. So it's one of those things where it definitely kind of feels like a changing of the guard a little bit in Atlanta sports right now with the Braves winning that World Series.
Definitely. I definitely agree with that. I've always said, because me personally being born in Atlanta and growing up in Atlanta, I've always had family members who grew up here, and my uncles and all of them, they were around when the teams were brought to Atlanta, whether it was or were just birthed here in Atlanta with the Falcons. So it became their team. So it's just, and it's always interesting to see that when I meet someone who's from a Chicago or who's from Detroit or someplace else, they seem like that's all they're waiting on is for Atlanta to show them that they can win, and then they'll convert because they'll hold on to the team. Now, I always ask, like, you a Lions fan? You've been living in Atlanta for 20 years. Why are you still a Lions fan? Why are you holding on to that? They're like, man, I want to, but I just can't. I haven't seen the Falcons win anything or whatever. And this may be, like you said, the something that gets that rolling, because I said the same thing. With the Braves winning the World Series, the Hawks having that deep run, it looks like UGA. And I think part of the UGA battle is if the Braves had to slay the dragon that was the Dodgers, if UGA can slay the dragon that is Alabama on their way to a national championship, I think that'll make it a whole lot sweeter, and that will make a shift. Because Paul Feinbaum said something, I didn't mean to convert it over to UGA, but Paul Feinbaum pretty much said something one day when he was saying the day of Clemson almost is over because of them losing all of their assistant coaches. And if that happens and you have UGA winning the national championship, well, we all know what happens when you have the national championship. You pretty much go on a run, because now every recruit in the country wants to be a part of your program. So I greatly hope that they can do it, man. If they can do that, it will be, I don't know, that would be something that you could see not only in Atlanta, but throughout the entire state of Georgia.
Yeah, and the thing too about it, what you said, I mean, Georgia already gets some of the top recruits.
Right.
But now it's like, It just keeps you getting the top recruits. It makes commits want to flip. They committed here. You know what? They won a national championship, and I definitely won a national championship when I play. Let me go here. And it just keeps you on top because of that. That's what the success does, especially with the playoff.
Right.
You know, I think that also helps teams, because it's like now players are like, I want to play in the playoff. Well, these are the schools you got to go to play in the playoff. And so those things are all going to help benefit UGA in that manner.
Yeah, because you definitely want those moments. You want that Justin Fields moment when he was at Ohio State, hurt his ribs, and he could barely walk, but he was out slinging. And you want those moments. And when you get those moments, that puts you on a whole another platform. Similar to March Madness, like, you want those moments. You go to those schools because you want those moments for when it comes down to it, everybody's watching you. And that's what it amounts to. You can't say that every Saturday everybody's watching you, but you can say that when it comes down to, when it gets past New Year's, that they're only watching a few games, and if you're a part of those games, then you're a part of something special. So I hope that UGA can go ahead and do that, and it's looking like it, because I mean, if you're looking around the college football spectrum, I don't think I've seen a team or watched a game that I've seen and I said, you know what, they could probably hang with Georgia. I mean, maybe Alabama, but Alabama is struggling at the moment. We saw what just happened with them in LSU, where LSU is in turmoil, and they took Alabama to the brink. You know what I'm saying? So, am I missing something, or have you seen someone that you said we need to take note of that in college football?
I mean, the thing about college football is that, you know, people can look a certain way, and then when the big moment comes, they play better. So it's easy for me. It's easy to just say, oh, the big powers, Alabama, just because it's Alabama. You never know.
Right.
Even though they haven't looked that great, you know, even Ohio State, it seems like they're always in it every year. They've, you know what I'm saying, even though they just struggled against Nebraska, Oregon, you know, they haven't been in this place in a while, but they're kind of a bigger program as well. And There's no team that you feel like that you've seen that's just like, wow, they definitely can beat Georgia if they play. It's just one of those things. Obviously, the big concern on Georgia's end is everybody's worried about the quarterback situation because everybody's worried is Kirby going to stick with Stinson? Because they feel like if he does that, that might potentially open the door now for us to get beaten because they don't think he's good enough to get us there. But outside of that, you know, I think there's no team that shows out like, oh, yeah, they definitely can beat us for sure.
Now, what's your take on that? Because me personally, I do see that there are limitations. You know what I'm saying? I see that there are limitations, but at the same time, if we're not in the situation where those limitations can be exposed, then are they really there? I mean, yes, they exist, but the team seems to be around Bennett and they seem to work for him. When JT got in, he threw a pick. It wasn't really his own, his fault, but I think sometimes I don't want to overthink the process. You don't want to outsmart yourself saying that we have a good thing going here, but if we add this, then it'll be better, and it turns out to not be better. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I definitely hear what you're saying. I think the thing about Kirby is his reputation's on the line kind of with this decision, because remember what he did with Justin Fields?
Right.
He stuck with Fromm because he got him to a national championship. He won games with him, even though Fields was the more talented player. And I think that's the same thing with this situation. I thought everybody thinks JT's the more talented player, but you know, Spencer got him here when JT went down. And so he's like, well, why would I just bench him all of a sudden when he's played well in certain games? And you know, he's done a lot for us. You know, Spencer does add an element to the offense that JT doesn't, which is the run game. And it's one of those things where the key for Kirby is this. If you're in a big SEC championship playoff game and Bennett is struggling, yes, you have an elite defense, and yes, you have a running game. But if it's a close game and you see this team matches up with us very well, you can't be scared to make that decision. Because if you don't make that, if we go down and he doesn't put JT in, they're going to crucify Kirby Smart. And so he has to be very, really careful with this. You know, so he has to make sure he's not going to do anything. Because listen, he may want to pull an Alabama from back in 2011 where you have an average quarterback, but your running game and defense are just so good, you don't really need one. And in today's day and age of college football, you kind of got to have at least he has to be at least good. You know, you don't want a guy who's going to potentially bring you down.
Well, you're right about one thing. It's definitely going to mark Kirby's career because, as you noted, it's the second time that we've been in this position. And that's it's a good position to be in, to say that you have two guys who are talented. I held my reservation because, once again, with Bennett, I kind of believe that he's out to prove something, coming from the walk-on status and going through his whole story. And then B, when you put JT in the game, now he has something to prove, and I'm afraid that he's going to overcompensate and try to put an entire season into maybe a couple of games or maybe a half and show the world that he's pro talent that he hasn't been able to show them all season. So it's definitely going to be interesting to watch and see how Kirby handles this, because you said a mouthful when you said that this is going to be something that's going to mark his career. Keeping it in the world of football, though, like we touched on the Falcons, but how sweet is it to beat the damn Saints?
Yes, it's definitely always sweet when you beat the Saints, especially in their house.
Right. I have family that went down to New Orleans, and sometimes I'll make the trip, but didn't get a chance to go this year. But it's always great because I'll tell my son, like, they're some of the worst losers ever, and it's and it's funny because they're angry. Like, it's almost like they act like you cheated. You know, whenever you win, they act like they weren't supposed to lose. They act like you cheated them or something. But when they beat you, it's always, they're the nicest people in the world. Oh, you'll get them next time, baby. You know, all the little stuff that you try to do. So it's always sweet. But this outlook for the season, I have to try to contain myself because I'm one of the people that think to themselves, well, if you're not contending for a championship or a playoff spot, then you need to be trying to not really tank, but keep an eye on it because you don't want to get too far out to where you get you have a draft pick that really doesn't benefit your team. How do you see that in terms of the Atlanta being 4-4 right now?
I mean, right now, currently today, we'd be in the playoffs. So, you know, that's something that I think is very encouraging. I think, you know, we got to give, you know, credit to Matt Ryan. He's played, you know, better, I think, than some people expected. Just coming, especially with the first year system thing and everything. And that, usually that's not his best year. But I've always told people one thing about Arthur Smith's offense is he runs an offense similar to what Kyle Shanahan ran at West Coast. So it's not nearly Matt's learning a new, entire new type of offensive concept. It's just learning Arthur Smith's version of the West Coast. And that makes the learning curve a little bit less deep and steep for Matt to understand and be able to execute out there. And, you know, being able to have guys like Cordell come up, have the breakout season he's had, you know, Kyle Pitts trying to get it going, you know, obviously Ridley hasn't been, you know, the greatest this season, but he's also dealing with some things and that could be contributing to his play. So you really don't know if we've even seen 100% of what Calvin really can be this year. And hopefully he's all right and gets back with us soon. And right now it feels like with the schedule we have and everything, like maybe, you know, we might be able to pull off a playoff appearance because you may only need 8 or 9 wins to get in the NFC this year.
Well, it's all the math is always is kind of been thrown off of me with the 17th game. So I'm interested to see, with this being the first year of 17, how does it look like? What is the record? Like, does a 9-8 get you in? Does do you have to have the 10-7? What is the actual line? But what I did want to ask, like, is it just me? Am I tripping? Or is this the most athletic that we've seen Matt Ryan ever? Like, Matt is getting out of here. Like, he's got some skates. Where has this been?
Well, listen, Arthur Smith put Matt Ryan through speed training this offseason. And people were like, why? He's not a mobile guy. He's not a running. He's not going to outrun guys. And it's like, it's not because he needed him to outrun. Sometimes what is the thing that Matt's known for? He's a statue. People think he's a statue.
Right.
He has a spot. He's there. He might step up once to the left, but he's in that pocket. Now with the speed training, it's gotten Matt Ryan more flexible and loose. And so now, before early in the season, I think you saw him trying to do the step game. And he could sack. Now he's going full on like stride, trying to get out of there because, especially with the offensive line that he has, you got to move a little bit. You don't have to outrun people, even though you've seen he juked out DeMario Davis twice. But he just needs to be able to move around and then create time to give opportunity for the receivers. And that's why he was put through that speed training this offseason.
Yeah, my cousin was sent me a text while we were watching the game. He said, man, why didn't Quinn do this? I said, man, listen, it's we can ask a bunch of questions about former regimes or whatever, but I like the way that the offense is looking. Mm-hmm. Earlier in the season, I was always saying I could see what Arthur Smith was trying to do. It's just at the moment, it didn't look like we had the pieces to do it. Like, we didn't, you know, Mike Davis, I think he's serving his purpose. I think it's going to come to fruition a little bit as we get into the season. As we, you know, as we get deeper into the season, I mean, we're 8 games in. As we get, you know, into game 15, 16, 17, because he's still running hard. And it's making it to the fact that you have to honor the run. So some of these play actions and stuff that Matt is doing, it's in respect to Mike Davis getting out there and taking those handoffs, and Cordarrelle Patterson taking those handoffs. And he has been the ultimate surprise because I understood when we picked him up on the team, I understood like maybe what we would do with him. And I thought that we would play him more at running back than we actually have. They've kind of moved him more to the receiver side, but I thought we would play him more at running back because to me, and what I was thinking was, he fits the mold of a Derrick Henry. Like, when size-wise, maybe not running and strength-wise, but I mean, even with that, I thought that that would be part of his role, and that's what be, because everybody was saying, well, you bring Arthur Smith over, he's not bringing Derrick Henry. Well, he brought something similar. How has, you know, Patterson looked to you? Was it a surprise for you at all?
I think the thing that is so shocking is yeah, you could say it's a surprise. I'm sure nobody expected Cordell to be this good, but it's like, how has nobody been able to figure how to use Cordell Patterson his entire career?
Right.
Because the thing is that when he made that switch to running back, I forgot which team. Maybe it was Chicago.
Either Chicago or Minnesota, one of the two.
Yeah, one of those two. Yeah. He bulked up for it because obviously you know he was a bit of a smaller guy, but he bulked up for it. But he still had his speed. And then remember, he was a receiver.
Right.
So he isn't just going to lose how to be a receiver. And I think when Arthur got him, he was just like, I can use him both ways. Like, literally, if we spread, like, you know, because here's the thing. Unless you have a really dangerous pass-catching running back, you're kind of like, when you put him out there, like if Mike Davis goes out on the route, you're thinking, unless it's like a very simple in the flat to the sideline, you're not really thinking anything of it. Cordell, you really could say, okay, we're going to take you out, run a post. And you have to honor it as a defense because Cordell legitimately was a wide receiver who can run a post route and burn your defense. So I think, you know, that has just made such a mismatch issue for him. And it's funny because, you know, when Kyle Pitts got going, everybody's thinking, oh, everybody's focusing on Kyle Pitts. But Cordell's been the most effective guy for us this entire year. He's been killing defenses this entire year. So that's why it still feels like with this offense, if we can just get all the pieces going, this offense can be very, very explosive. Kyle really comes back and plays well. Zacchaeus has played well the last couple of games. I think he's been making some plays. You know, Gage got him more involved this past game. You think, okay, Ryan's going back to, like I like to call it, the Kyle Shanahan offense in this. It was, even with Julio, it was this. Whoever's open, throw it to him. Whoever makes the play, give it to him. It's not focus here, focus there. It's just whoever, Matt. Because Matt can spread the ball around and light defenses up. And I think he's been doing that this year. And I think that has helped this offense, even without a running game, still put up points and be effective.
Yeah, I think that's where I hope that he's most comfortable. Because that was the year he won the MVP. We went to the Super Bowl. I mean, because it seems that he has a security blanket, like the Tony Gonzalez when he was here. He was a security blanket. So even when it was third and long, everyone knew where it was going. He was going to force it in. Sometimes he did it with Julio. He was going to force a lot of throws into Julio. And you can't do that all the time because that's when you're going to have defenses key on guys. And now you can't key on anyone. Like I said, you had Zacchaeus, you got Gage, you got, you know, you have all of these different guys that are coming in. And even if you're just catching two or three passes for first downs, it's still something you're going to say, hold on, when this guy comes in, a defender's going to point to him and say, who has him? Mm-hmm. You know, and that's going to be something special. But what is the outlook for the Atlanta Falcons for this year? We talked about if the season ended now, we'd be in a wild card slot as a playoff team. I think it was like the seventh seed or whatever. Mm-hmm. What is that a realistic? Do you honestly see us maintaining that slot or something different?
I think with the way the bottom of the NFC is, it's very realistic. I think there's a chance the Saints could suffer with Jameis Winston not being there. Mm-hmm. They may even come down even a little bit. Now, obviously, they have a really good defense, and that's going to keep them in games. They may win games because of the running game and defense. But you saw it against us. I mean, we're not even – you know our defense isn't a world beater. They come out against Tom Brady, played their butts off, and they come out against us, and, you know, they couldn't really do anything offensively against us, you know, too much. Outside of those last couple of possessions, we pretty much were able to control their offense most of the game. So, and then Minnesota losing games, Bears, nobody, there's nobody really that's a threat. Carolina looks like they're kind of falling off. Like, there's every single team, it seems like they're going down. So it's like, right, unless a team switches it, I mean, if the Falcons remain steady, I don't see why they wouldn't be in the mix at the end. And I think they're going to try to go for it.
Yeah, an interesting game that's coming up with the Cowboys is going to tell us a lot. Because I think the Cowboys are one of the top teams when you talk about Tampa, when you talk about Dallas, you talk about the Rams, you know, you talk about some of these different teams that are out there that are on, that we consider to be on top. It's going to be telling because how we match up with them is it's almost like the pretender contender type game and where we'll be. I think we can handle the run a little bit, but Dallas doesn't seem to be all the way sold on their running game. You know, a lot of they are very quick for a team that has two pretty good running backs. They're very quick to abandon the game. Like, I've watched multiple games where you say, well, why aren't they giving Zeke the ball more? Or why aren't they using Pollard more? Well, you know, whatever. So they seem to be pretty eager. I think our run defense is probably one of our biggest weaknesses. And I thought it in the Saints game was, why aren't they running the ball more? I thought the Saints had some success when you had Ingram, you had the combination of Ingram and Kamara going back and forth. You had that whole thing going, and it was seeming like they were getting 8 yards a pop. And then all of a sudden, they just stopped doing it. I mean, I understand that you got down, but you were only down about 10 points or so. Was it the fact that you think Deshaun Payton may have just been outsmarting himself?
I mean, potentially, you know, I do think in the second half, the Falcons' run defense started stuffing up a little bit more. I think, you know, Anthony Rush, you know, getting signed and activated to the roster, big 350-pound guy that we don't have, that we finally got, I think he was starting to kind of do something. So it kind of made him say, okay, we're not maybe doing it to the same way we had in the first half. But I think he also gets into the, you know, in today's NFL, it's easy to become pass happy. I think what you said about Dallas, you got to think about it. They got multiple wide receivers. They have such a big play offense. Like, you know, it's one of those things. Why wouldn't we throw the ball to those guys? You know, it's hard to keep yourself honest as a running game, because the running game is more of a methodical churning it. And you want that firework. And I think sometimes that's why I think, you know, guys sometimes just go to the passing game. But I also do think that I think the Falcons also made an adjustment in terms of like, okay, well, if we stop the running game, or we put more into the running game, do we think Trevor Siemian can beat us over the top?
Right.
And, you know, the Saints are not good at wide receiver this year without Michael Thomas. And, you know, Trevor Siemian is a downgrade from Jameis Winston. A.J. Terrell probably had one of his best games of the season, so he locked down whoever he was on. And maybe Peyton felt like, I mean, we got to try something and see if we can get some success here, because, you know, I think that's kind of what their process of thinking was against us. But, you know, as much as criticism our defense gets, I mean, and obviously, again, the outside of the game, yeah. I personally think that's just play calling, because I think I understand every team does this. They kind of play that soft coverage when you have a lead. But the thing is that a lot of those teams that do have pass rushes, so it's like kind of okay, because it's like, oh, if we play this zone and then we get pressure, he might make a mistake. Well, we don't got a pass rush. So when you do it, you're kind of just letting the team move down the field at will and then scoring, and it's just like, okay. So, you know, for me, I think outside of those moments, the defense hasn't played like super duper terrible. Like, we held the Saints to 9 points through three quarters. Like, that's impressive. Like, last week, you know, for the previous week before, we weren't getting lit up, you know, Miami for the most part, 14 points going into the fourth quarter. Like, it's, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's not like
right.
30 points in going into the fourth quarter. Like, they're holding their own early. It's just late when they start doing that conservative play call, especially defensively. You know, then we like, wow, our defense can't stop nobody. And it's just like, well, I mean, we changed the way we play defense.
And that's I don't know if that's just a part of coaching, because it happens across the board. Like you said, it happens across the board. And it just may be a natural instinct as a coach.
But yeah. And also because you don't want to get beat over the top. That's always the fear. So,
and I think for the most part, I like the way Coach Pease has been calling the defense. I think it's been aggressive. And also, he's done a much better job than I could see of putting guys in a position to win. Like, he's not asking a lot of the players to do some things that they're not accustomed to doing or they're not comfortable with doing. So I think that's the way. Real quick before I let you go, like, what do you see in terms of the future for the Falcons, in terms of what they may be looking for, or what Arthur Smith may be trying to address, and how he wants to build the team into his image?
It's funny, you know, there's been questions about the receiver position because, you know, Calvin's due for a contract. And if we don't sign Calvin, does that mean we're going to do a full-scale reset at wide receiver next year? Maybe, potentially. I think the Falcons need to look, maybe get a bigger wide receiver because we don't have a big wide receiver right now. So that may be something they try to invest in, if not in the draft and free agency. Running game, I know people are wondering.
You can always move over Kyle, you know.
Realistically, too, it's like, I mean, we were expecting Hurst to be gone. So
right.
You move Kyle to Y, it's like, okay, so he's going to be the tight end, like, legitimately. Like, you know, so even though, hey, Matt Ryan's worked with Jacob Tammy before. So, you know, and he made him look pretty good. So I think running back, I know, also is another position as well. People are wondering with Mike Davis, you know, because he hasn't had the season that people feel like, you know, we were expected out of him. Do they move off of him potentially? And then defensively, I think it's pretty simple. You just got to improve that defensive front. I think linebackers are pretty solid. Secondary, you just got to improve that second defensive back position. I think Hawkins and Grant are going to be the safeties of the future. So defensive line, if you can just get bigger and also get another pass rusher in there with Fowler, I think those are what probably Arthur Smith and Terry are going to probably try to address this offseason to try to make sure that we, if they do end up making the playoffs, saying, okay, well, if we made a playoff team with this roster, even though they still have limited cap space and everything, let's see if we can make these adjustments to maybe try to make it even deeper next year. I always worry about succeeding expectations now because, you know, as a fan base, we kind of like, oh, we made the playoffs. Okay, now we got to be for Super Bowl. If not, it's a failure. And so it's just, you know.
Hey, that's one of real. I mean, we have people are still disappointed that the Hawks didn't win the whole thing. And like you said, you don't, as a level-headed person who watches the game, you can't honestly say, well, you know, they weren't supposed to make it that far, because you know, no one wants to hear that. But Bryce, I appreciate it. I won't take up too much more of your time. I thank you for coming out once again. Bryce, y2ksports.com, Sideline Sports. Where else can they check out your work?
Yeah, y'all can follow me on Twitter too at Brycey_2k as well. And also, you can go to my YouTube channel at Bryce Lewis if you want to check out my Atlanta Hawks and Atlanta Falcons fan shows, where I bring people on from the industry to talk about the teams. It's not really it's not a scheduling kind of thing. It's just whenever. So just recently did one with NFL Network reporter Steve Weiss on the Atlanta Falcons. So check that out, if you guys are interested in that.
Cool. Well, once again, this has been the Commissioner's Conversation with me, your host, Commissioner Gordon. You can always follow me on Instagram at the.commissioner.gordon. Also on Twitter at G Robinson Sports. And once again, I just put up my TikTok under the encouragement of my children. but you can follow me there at the Commissioner Gordon. Also, again, until next week, thank you again, Bryce Lewis, for coming up.
Okay, bye.